It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave and DeGenevic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM.
I'm elated at the news we just learned. In talking moments ago to Utah's Director of Immunizations, Rich Lakin, Dave, he told us that in the coming weeks, 100,000 doses will start to go to 100,000 Utahns of these vaccines for COVID-19.
It was amazing. When we heard that number, you and I immediately started doing the math. We were like, well, we cut that in half because you need two doses. He said, no, 100,000 means 100,000 get inoculated, and then we will receive another 100,000. That's the most likely scenario, at least.
Because there's a three-week waiting period between these two doses that you need with the Pfizer vaccine. And then let's not forget, Moderna, he said, is just a few weeks behind in getting the vaccines and the vaccines to Utah. And so we're going to have a second wave coming. It sounds like there's hope.
Johnson & Johnson is doing their own vaccine. So, I mean, this could just absolutely cascade.
Former Health and Human Services Secretary and former Governor of Utah, Mike Leavitt, on the line with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your reaction to the fact that we're hearing that 100,000 Utahns could start getting the first immunization shot in the coming weeks, Governor?
I celebrate right along with you. I think it is the beginning of a substantial breakthrough. But we have to remember it's just the beginning, and there's a lot of work to be done. And maybe the most important thing we can do is not only get a vaccine, but we've got to get through the next 4 months or 5 months, because the virus is still going to be with us during that time, and it's growing in numbers fast.
Yes, and at an unsustainable rate, no question. But when we were talking to you early on in this pandemic, you had really given us a great perspective of how long it takes to develop a vaccine. Fast forward 8 months later, can you just give us maybe some perspective on what it means that we went from no vaccine to 8 months later, we have a vaccine? I would imagine you're as amazed as anybody.
Oh, I think we're all delighted and amazed. Vaccine development is measured in years, not months. And it typically can be 4, 5, 6 years. Doing it in 8 months is a tribute to science, commitment, huge investment, not just here, but around the world.
I think it's so important, too, that how the state is approaching this, Governor, in that they are saying they're going to start vaccinating healthcare workers first and foremost. As we look at the numbers from yesterday, once again, thousands of Utahns diagnosed with COVID-19, 512 people as of last night in the hospital. So it's important to get them vaccinated first. Who should be in that second wave, in that second phase?
I think it will be at-risk populations, particularly those who are over 65 and have an underlying health condition. I'll be very surprised if the national priority list does not focus on that group as the second. Then I think you'll probably get to another group of people who go at risk every day, and that's people like teachers and others that are potentially at risk. So there'll be a priority list that'll be developed. The big question is, when will it be broadly available to citizens who may not be in a high-risk category? And I think what's been said is that April, or might I say spring, is likely the time when we'll see it expand. But we'll have a lot more experience by then. And as you pointed out in the preview of the show, a lot more vaccine manufacturers, we're going to learn more. We're going to find out that there are some that are more applicable one population or another. But this is really good news.
Former governor of Utah, and also former Health and Human Services Secretary Mike Leavitt on the line with us, reacting to this news that we just learned from Rich Lakin, who is the director of immunizations for the state of Utah. Let's listen.
So Utahns make up about 1% of the total population of the United States. So that means that we will receive 1% of what the vaccine is, because they're going to base it on population. So if we got 10 million doses, that looks like that we could possibly receive 100,000 doses in the first wave, or in the first phase come that December.
And as exciting as this news is, I look at how much of this coronavirus has been politicized at every step of the way. And even right now, as we're looking at a transition of power from President Trump to Joe Biden, there's this reluctance to concede the race by the president. You sit on a board, an advisory board, the Center for Presidential Transition. Does this clunkiness in transitioning power, does this affect the coronavirus, the vaccine, the implementation of the vaccine program?
Pandemics and politics have always, unfortunately, come together, because when you're dealing with a pandemic, you're dealing with people who have different priorities, who have different risk tolerances, who have different philosophies, and that's clearly played out here. Where we come together is on solutions like vaccines. Now, the president obviously has wanted to emphasize that this 8-month miracle came under his administration, and he deserves the credit for that. In a political atmosphere, there are people anxious to take it away. But what will happen now is that we'll have to go into a distribution mechanism. And what's most important in my mind is that there is coordination in the handoff. And that's what people are a bit concerned about. I'm inclined to believe that the transition will occur whether or not the Trump administration cooperates. 75 days is going to go and come. And those who are handling the transition, or rather that are handling the vaccine, they want it to go well. They'll do their best. Those that are coming in, they want it to go well, and they'll do their best. And they're professionals, and they're people who know what to do. The information that's required to do this is readily available. And so I wish there was better cooperation, but I think it's going to happen no matter what.
Governor, when you say readily available, I'm envisioning policy manuals that maybe you once handed down as you left the position of Health and Human Services Secretary. What do you mean by readily available?
But first of all, the government itself does not do any of this distribution. The government hires distribution partners who are, and I'll give you a specific example. There are three companies, McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health. Those are three very large companies who have trucks that go to every drugstore, every hospital, every medical facility multiple times a week. So why would the government want to create some mechanism other than that?
Yes.
And so they're using, and those companies, I am confident that the Biden administration is talking to those companies about what they're doing and what they're planning. That may not be coming from the White House, but it is that conversation is clearly happening, because everyone wants this to go well.
Former Governor Mike Leavitt, thank you so much for joining us. I was also the Health and Human Services Secretary under President Bush. And Debbie, he's absolutely right. Pandemics and politics have always played a game. And, there's this jockeying for credit, and there's also jockeying around to blame people. But there's no question, it's in the entire world's best interest that this moves forward incredibly smoothly.
I've always appreciated him joining the show and giving us his perspective and his insight.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.